Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Chairs. My name is Fernando Arencibia, and with me, as always, is the very consistent Jennifer Wollman. Jennifer, say hi.
Hi, everybody.
Consistency is key in business as it is in partnerships. So find yourself a consistent partner and you will do very, very well. Today, we are a day off of a conference that happened here in Miami, Inman Connect On Tour Miami. And as you can imagine, the way that that conference is structured, they bring a lot of top teams and top producing teams of luxury residential brands. They also have some very robust discussions about where the industry is going. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of conversation about AI. And there was one piece of data, one stat that really stood out to me, which is that this year, the cost of running the AI language models is one-tenth of the cost that it was last year. So imagine that if you have any doubts about AI and that it is here to stay, right? I think that that's a stat that will let you know that it's here to stay and it's only going to be more and more prevalent in our lives. And so we thought that today we would kind of break down what are the top myths and misconceptions about AI, because I think that there is a lot going on, and I think there's a lot that we as professionals don't 100% understand. I think it would be a good thing for us to kind of break it down. So I'll start with number one. We have these 10 myths and misconceptions about AI, which, by the way, just for full transparency,
we're probably generated by AI.
We're not probably. They were definitely generated by an AI language model.
I know my partner.
Of course. So the first one on the list, AI will take all of our jobs.
True.
Not true. A myth and a misconception. And, you know, I love this phrase that, you know, I remember Ines Hegedix Garcia mentioning it in a presentation that she had, which is that AI is not going to replace the brokers. The brokers that use AI are going to replace brokers who don't use AI. AI automates a lot of tasks. It doesn't automate a career, right? It's definitely going to change the role of the way that we do the work. It will enhance productivity, but you got to look at it almost like this idea of augmentation rather than replacement. And one of the speakers spoke about the idea that you have to look at AI as your co-pilot. And I think that there is always a percentage of people that hesitate to embrace new technologies. They hesitate to embrace change. I think that's a very natural thing in us as a species, us as human beings. But the reality is that there is a lot of enhancements of the work that you're doing currently that AI will replace. And we'll dive a little more deeper into what that means. But yeah, I don't believe that AI will take our jobs.
No, I think it just helps make our jobs more productive and efficient. And Phil Stringer in his presentation, which, by the way, if you ever get a chance to see him, amazing and tons of value. I mean, he gave us all the top AI products that he uses with examples and everything of how to use them. And that was super, super valuable. A lot of time people just talk about it and they don't show you or give you. And he did that. So kudos to him. But he was saying just consider AI as your assistant to make mundane tasks or to do a deeper dive into it. So the second...
It's interesting, Jennifer, because, you know, we often talk about, especially, we work with agents that are at a different stages of their careers. And often what happens is, you know, we always want for there to be a mindset of what is the highest and best use of your time. And I remember years ago, probably about 20 years ago, having a conversation with a then colleague back when I was with RE/MAX. And I remember that we were having a conversation about the amount of micro tasks that we were involved in on a day-to-day basis and how much of a time suck that was and how important it was to block out a period of time in your day where you were just focusing on the things that were going to generate business, the things that were going to actually make a difference in your bottom line. And I have found that this AI is going to do a lot of those micro tasks that you would involve yourself doing repeatedly and that would take so much of your time during the day.
You know what? And Beth Azor has always said, if you don't have an assistant, you are an assistant. So now with AI, there's no excuse. Right. Everybody has an assistant.
Right.
What I would love, and I'm waiting to find it, I want an AI assistant just for my email. Because we do each have people who go through our email and, you know, get rid of the junk. But at the same time, I just want something to make that so much easier. So
it's here already. So yes. we'll talk.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm sure it is. Yeah. So the second AI myth is AI understands the worlds like humans do. The truth is that AI doesn't understand. It predicts based on patterns and data. It doesn't have common sense, context, or consciousness. That being said, you did tell me that you were either at a presentation or tried something that, depending on the prompt you put in, you can say, you can, in a prompt, you can tell AI, please come up with a marketing piece for XYZ so that I can make a pitch to the seller.
Right.
Or you can say, please make a marketing pitch for XYZ that I can make to the seller. If I don't make this pitch, I'm probably going to be bankrupt or homeless or whatever. Yeah. And you said that the quality based on that was deeper and more detailed than everything else. So
this myth about AI understands the world like humans do, and the fact that that's not really the case, is it kind of supports the fact that AI is not going to take our jobs, because there is a level of understanding common sense. There are so many things for you to contribute that, you know, AI is not able to do. What you mentioned is something that it's very scary when I first heard it, and it was a presentation on AI, and it came from some of the people that first invented AI and that were working on these language models, which is that, you know, they basically, you could ask AI the same question, and if in the second question you tell it why you need it to be so good work, I need to impress my partners, I'm going to get fired if I don't, you know, and you give it that when they evaluated the output of both of those questions, the output was much better when you told AI that there was something at stake for you, but, and this is the scary part, they can't figure out why. They don't know why it does that. They don't know why the output is better. Of course, you cannot program empathy. So it's not really based on that. And so the scary part when I tell people the story is, well, they don't know why AI is doing that. And that's part of what they have created. It's you're creating a model that continually is learning. And there are things that even though those creators are learning about how AI provides that output. So guys, we're living in the future, you know? So, you know, we got to take that into account. And to that point, and I think it's supporting to that is the myth, which is the AI is 100% objective and unbiased. Well, that's not the case. And this is something that goes back to when people are using predictive analytics to try to remove biases from a process. I remember seeing a presentation from a futurist, right? And she was saying, I get hired by companies to create algorithms where they want to remove certain biases out of their own decision making so they can make the better decision. And it's this company, and they figured out, you know, we want to hire this ideal attorney in this firm. And in order for us to hire the ideal attorney, what we did is we looked at our roster and we found out which are the attorneys that grew the fastest, that really embodied our culture, that really bought in, and what are their characteristics. And then they created an algorithm based on those characteristics. And then a year later, they realized that why are we getting the same kind of person, right? But what they didn't realize is that there was inherent bias in them only looking inward at their company. They all hired guys. They all hired from the same universities. They had the same background, you know? And so therefore you cannot all of a sudden attract a variety of people that you need and have the diversity of thought and the diversity of experiences when you're only pulling from one side. So AI is only unbiased as the data that it's trained on, right? And if you have biased data goes in, then biased data goes out, right? And so it becomes almost like you're amplifying your biases, right? By doing that. And this is a part that, you know, that is part of some of the other myths that we're going to talk about today. When I say that AI is your co-pilot, you got to also look at yourself as you are the trainer of that AI language model. You know, whether you're going to use ChatGPT or you're going to use Gemini or you're going to use Claude AI, you're going to use Grok. The reality is that how you train the AI, what you ask it, the information that you're every time that you are interacting with that model, you're training that model.
And that brings us to number four, which is you need to be a data scientist to use AI. No, you don't need to be a data scientist. You need to be a curious and thoughtful writer. So because the thing that matters the most about using it isn't the programming, it's the prompt, right? And most modern AI tools are very user-friendly. They're built for non-technical. I mean, if AI were technical, I wouldn't use it at all because I get frustrated very easily with stuff. And this is being curious. So what do I really want to know? What is the best way to ask it? Yeah. How detailed do I want my question to be? Because what kind of answer do I want? So you almost start with not in terms of a bias, but again, to the point of the marketing plan example that we were using to pitch to somebody, you know, what do you want to include? What do you know your capabilities are? What information do you already have, et cetera? Yeah. And then you can actually tell it, use these links, but go outside what I'm providing you to bring in information or ideas that I might have missed, right? So if you do a very, very detailed prompt, you're going to get a much better product than if you just say, come up with a business plan or with a marketing plan for XYZ property.
And you know what you mentioned about the interface and the use of ease of use and of integration is the reason why it's only going to grow larger and larger, you know, because we are exponentially going to grow faster than the internet grew. This is going to grow faster than the iPhone and the smartphones grew, you know? Yeah, it already has, right? It has already exceeded those numbers. I think that the way that they evaluate it is based on once a new technology has 50% adoption, right, by its potential users, they time that, you know, so it took X amount of years for the iPhone to be adopted by 50% of potential users. It took a certain amount of years for the internet to be adopted by 50% of users. But those years have shrunk tremendously when it comes to the adoption of AI. And I think that the ease of the usability of the user interface is a big component of that.
Yeah, they said that AI, and I can't remember who said it, I was looking through my notes, but it was something like the internet took something like 10 years to adopt. The iPhone took, I think, 8. AI has taken 2.
Right.
And you know, there's always early adopters.
Yeah, we gotta verify those numbers,
but it was something like that.
It was shocking enough to say
it was exponentially faster.
It was exponentially faster. Right. And I don't know if you remember years ago, back when Paul Cauchy was chief of commercial for Miami. Shout out to Paul and all of the school psychologists. Yeah. But I remember that we did have a commercial event. And there was someone that was speaking about the future growth of tech. And he spoke about this. Right. He spoke about how exponentially faster the growth was going to be. And we've all spoken about how quickly the internet has changed our lives, paling in comparison to how quickly these tools are going to be adopted and are going to shift gears. Which brings me to the next one. AI learns on its own like a human. This is kind of like what I mentioned before. Not at all. It needs structured data. It needs training. It needs defined goals. It doesn't have that instinct of curiosity of teaching itself. It will educate itself based on what you tell it. And that's why, you know, it needs a human interacting with it in order to get better and better and to give you the output that you're looking for, you know, I want to mention this, but I know it's in the next line. So what is the next one that you have there? Because I think that's
the best one on the list. AI is infallible and always accurate.
There you go. And I remember speaking to an attorney that we do a lot of work with. He was telling me a story about another attorney. One goes to court. He's using AI to draft these briefs. Well, the judge basically says, Mr. So-and-so, did you use AI to create this brief? Because there was an error. And the error was that there was a court case that was being quoted that is non-existent. And we had a conversation about this. AI will, in my interactions, will never tell you, I don't know the answer to this. But sometimes where it doesn't find the answer, it will create the answer, which is why you always need a human being to look at it, because it is not infallible. It is not always accurate.
Right. I want to say about a year or two ago, 60 Minutes did a whole thing on AI. And it was funny because they said that the icebergs in the North Pole were made out of penguin pee or something like that. Like, that's what was generated out of AI.
Right,
it was something
right.
weird to yeah. that effect. Yeah. But this is going to take me into my kind of paranoid. George Gare always asks me if I'm paranoid. But it's going to take me into my paranoid stage, which is, you know, if AI is learning based on what we feed it. And I think of all the hackers and all the people trying to hack our emails and everything. If I'm really nefarious, I'm just sitting in my back room feeding AI all sorts of crazy stuff mm-hmm. so that the information I get is wrong, right? And and so you have to be really, really careful. And this is where the human side comes in. And somebody pointed this out on a panel. There are two parts where the you know, the personal and the relationship and everything comes in. And one of the agents is a luxury agent. He says, yeah, AI, if I feed it all of the information about luxury sales in Miami and price per square foot and comps and everything else, I'm going to get great information. But what I don't have is what I don't get from AI is the insights. Well, I was in the room when that deal was done. And the reason that deal was either so high or so low or off from whatever is because of XYZ. And AI doesn't have that because that's not being fed in. That's not part of the algorithm that they use.
And really what he was addressing is the importance of being plugged into your market and understanding and being hyper-local expert and how important that is as a value to your clients. Because, you know, look, all the data is out there. The information is there. Context is not there. Right. And AI doesn't do context. Right. Yeah. It doesn't account for nuance. It doesn't account for, you know, misinterpretations. It doesn't. I think one thing says it can hallucinate facts.
Yeah, it can hallucinate facts. Or
so did I mention that we got this from an AI language model? I mean, if the AI language model is telling
AI
you,
is calling itself
we can
hallucinate.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we can. It can. Even myself, I can hallucinate facts, you know.
I've never heard that phrase. It's a great phrase. Yeah, you hallucinate facts.
I think I'm going to use that.
I think we live in a world where a lot of people hallucinate facts, yeah. But you know, that's another conversation.
I don't hallucinate them. I just make them up.
Yeah, exactly.
But one of the things that we've noticed as platforms start to adopt this, and this is where the hyper local specialist has to be very on their toes, and why anybody coming into a market should use them. Is because I've seen information coming out on some of these platforms where they're platforms that I've always used, but now I can see the AI coming in.
Yeah.
And I told you this, I said, I got scared because I saw this new platform. I'm like, oh, it looks really cool. And then I was doing evaluation on a property because we got an unsolicited offer on a property, and the platform was saying that the value of that property based on market, based on everything, was $5 million, where our offer was 10 over that, right. 10 million over that. And when you go in and I'm like, how did they come up with the $5 million? So then I went down that rabbit hole, like, how did they come up with that? And I'm like, oh, they just based it on flat out comps for the area. They didn't break down the asset class. They didn't break down similar properties. They didn't consider the land value alone. So as I started going down that rabbit hole, I'm like, oof, I'm worried now for people who are out there having their properties priced for sale, or who are making offers doing so based on stuff that's being fed by AI. Yeah. I'm not saying don't use it.
I don't worry too much about that from the point of view that the market will snuff those things out, right? They're going to lose those deals. They're not going to, because at the end of the day, especially in commercial real estate, there is so much nuance. There is so much that continually changes. There's so much specificity about not only the asset class, but the asset class within that municipality, how the zoning changes, you know, changes at a state, national, and local laws, and how it affects the real estate. Those things are not things that an AI model can just, you know, that or an algorithm can predict and that can tell you. That it can tell you its value. And it brings us to myth number 7, which has to do with really where I think is the biggest opportunity for those of us that are embracing this, which is that the myth is that AI can replace creativity and emotional intelligence. It can assist in your creative process. It can get you started. It can help you grow as you germinate an idea and go down these tangents and help you with the research and help you to kind of focus your attention into what you want to do. But remember, it starts with how you prompt it. It doesn't feel, it doesn't have intuition. It doesn't create from its own life experiences like we create from our own life experience. And so, you know, one of the things that Jonathan Lichtstein mentioned when he was on the panel from Location Realty, he mentioned that the biggest opportunity for us as users of AI is what do we do with the output of the work that these language models are creating, really, because that's what they are. And so the creativity is how we are using that data that we're getting, that information that we're getting, that structure that we're getting into creating something of value that will generate business for us. And that's where the human component is going to be a bigger aspect of it than what the technology is able to create.
Agreed. Yeah. Now this one, I don't know, I go back and forth on this one. So myth number 8, the AI we have now is like what you see in movies, an AI wrote truth. Hollywood AI, such as sentient robots, AGI, is science fiction. Today's AI is narrow, excellent at specific tasks, but not general intelligence.
Yeah.
I think AI is like what you see in the movies. A lot of the stuff is like we see in the movies. I think of Dick Tracy, you know, talking into his watch and who was
okay,
the
other guy. Okay, but hold on. That's so, not AI. That's, I know. You know, that's
but,
just...
But there are movies about AI where the where the robots are taking over. And
Terminator 1, 2,
three.
No, those are old robots. You're dating yourself. Yeah? You're dating yourself.
All right.
But, I mean, it is a little bit like what you see in the movies, right? Where computers are doing tasks at a much more rapid rate than a human can. They process information way faster, et cetera. So that one, I'm straddling.
You're straddling.
Yes.
You know, look, you come from in your formative years, there was a lot of those movies about, you know, like a dystopian, you know, like even Westworld. Like, you think about a lot of what that, you know, what those movies really were about, which is this dystopian society, this fear of what technology could be, fear of what artificial intelligence could be. I think it is smart when you have something like AI that has such a rapid adoption rate that is significantly less costly to develop, that we do take a pause about how it affects, you know, our society. So I think that there is definitely an important conversation to be had about that. But we're not there yet, you know. Just give us a couple more years, then we could talk about those dystopian movies. AI, you know, myth number nine is a one-time investment. And look, that's not the case. And most of them, if you're going to do a pro, you're going to pay monthly. But really, that's not what I'm focusing on here. It requires ongoing training, meaning that you are constantly having to interact with it. You're constantly doing this work. The more you interact with it, the better you get. And that's why, you know, definitely I see people getting a degree in AI prompt, you know, construction, right? Because how you develop and how you construct those prompts, it's really where the biggest value is. So you can, you know, begin to create those shortcuts. But there is a lot of learning. It's not a plug and play. It's a living system from the point of view that it's always, you know, you're always teaching it how you want the output. You know, does it work? Does it not work?
Well, it's a tech tool. And like any technology, it's constantly changing and evolving and getting better and better. And you like to say that this is the worst version of everything we're going
to
see.
Well, I got to give the credit to George Guerra, who's the one who told me, you know, that's the worst. That is the worst version of that product that you'll ever see. Right. And he's 100% right. And there's already been a huge amount of change in how better it is over the course of 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, so it's crazy.
Yeah. And then the final myth is only big companies benefit from AI. And I think that that's kind of obvious, at least to me. I think that the people who benefit way more are the sole practitioners, the smaller brokerages, because now you can do with AI what maybe you would have had to wait a while until your budget allowed for a marketing person or for a script writer or for a whatever.
Yeah.
Now you have that ability within AI and it gives you some breathing room until you eventually hire somebody to run that part of the AI.
Well, the reality is that I think that definitely a myth. I think it's a huge opportunity for small brokerages, for agents that are starting out, for even agents that are, I think it's a great opportunity for everybody, quite frankly. But I think that if you have an assistant and your assistant is not using AI, each of you are not taking full advantage of the opportunities that are there. There's a lot of tasks that AI will free up your assistant doing. But again, you always need that, you need that continual training, you need that work. So the people that surround you, that are your support, they also need to be using it so that they can free up their time to do more higher order activities that are going to really generate the growth in your company that you're looking for.
And using AI for marketing, content, client insights, and task automation are the logical ones. And I just want to wrap up by sharing the information that Phil Stringer shared with us. And those are three AI tools, one of which I hadn't heard. It was a first for me. But the first one is notebooklm.google. It's a virtual assistant that analyzes your documents to help you learn, study, and conduct research. The second one is buyerprediction.com. It analyzes any property and creates a buyer persona of who is most likely to purchase that property. And then Gamma App, a platform designed to help users quickly create presentations, documents, and web pages. So there you go. Hope that was valuable.
Well, I mean, what else is there to say?
AI says to say goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'd love your input and your comments on this. What do you think of AI? What is your favorite language model that you are using?
How do you use it?
How do you use it? Give us some feedback. And as always, thank you for listening in. And without further ado, say bye, Jennifer.
Bye.
Jennifer.
Jennifer.